Open my lips, Lord, to speak your words, and open our hearts to receive them. Amen. Please do sit down. So, how frightened have you ever been in your life? Taxiing along the runway of an airfield in California 30 years ago for the first time with six other people all togged up in parachutes, it dawned on me that I wasn't coming down in this plane. That was pretty frightening. But I don't mean something like that. Or being nervous about taking an exam. A number of people have been taking GCSEs recently. I don't mean that. Or performing in a concert, giving your first speech. All of these things should go okay, provided that we've rehearsed, provided we do what the instructor has said that we should do. I don't even mean the fear that pilot Tammy Jo Schultz must have felt when an engine exploded on her Southwest Airlines flight over the US and the aircraft started to shake and a passenger was sucked out of the plane. When she was reminded by this event of her days of pretty hairy flying as a US Navy fighter pilot, she turned back to her experience and she said, "Oh, here we go again." All these are events, if you like, of controlled fear. We turn to our training or experience to cope. We have good reason to think that things are going to be okay, but we still feel fear, but we're on top of it. Some would call this sensation excitement. It's going to be fine. No, I mean the totally terrifying fear which grips us when a situation is completely beyond our control and where the result could easily end in our death or the death of someone that we love. It's this sort of situation that Mark is describing in the gospel passage just read to us. The disciples are set out onto the Sea of Galilee. They are, for most part, experienced fishermen. They've seen storms. They know how to reef the sail, batten down the hatches and ride it out. But they also know when they are completely outside their control, when all their experience is telling them this is not going to end well. When the water is so cascading into the boat that bailing it out will no longer help. The boat is sinking and they're going to drown. Meanwhile, Jesus is asleep on a cushion. Why did Mark put in that little detail about the cushion? Perhaps to indicate the contrast between the work that the disciples were doing, bailing out the sinking boat, and Jesus relaxed, snoozing in the stern. I can well imagine the sense of frustration that they must have felt. Again, in the 1980s, I was driving with four friends in a Suzuki Jimny designed for two people, the 200 miles between Lake Turkana in Kenya and Samburu Game Lodge, along a dirt track which passes for a road. A road in which we passed almost no villages and almost no other traffic. And we had three punctures in the space of as many hours. We'd replaced our spare tire, and the second was a slow puncture, but we couldn't find a way to repair the third puncture. It was getting dark. There were wild animals all around. And we'd recently passed in the dusk the worrying sight of this huge bonfire surrounded by tribesmen holding spears. We were not about to take the risk of that particular bit of cross-cultural engagement. Whilst my friend Piers and I and the two of the girls with us were desperately trying to work out how to fix the tyre, the remaining girl, a Rhodesian, was asleep in the back of the car. Finally, as we were descending into panic, the girl in the car woke up and observed how the mechanics on her father's farm in Zimbabwe used to stand the tyres up on one end to get the tyres off and to mend them. I said, "If you've got any more helpful suggestions, perhaps you get out of the car and make them." I was pretty furious, as you can imagine. We were panicking, but she didn't seem to care. You know, she didn't care enough about our situation to get out of the car and help. And not surprisingly, we all ended up shouting at each other. I feel sure that many of us can think of similar incidents which have happened in our lives, where life is completely out of control and all our emotions overspill and we don't cover ourselves in glory, really. But I was so reminded of this story when reading this Bible passage. Everything can easily deteriorate when life seems in danger. Anger is often the result of panic, as it was for me on that dusty road in Africa, as it was on the Sea of Galilee for the fishermen. They were cross that Jesus was asleep on a cushion, while everyone else was doing what they could to stop the boat from sinking. They woke him up and used some very emotionally charged words. "Teacher, do you not care that we're perishing?" When we're suffering, we can often feel that either God doesn't care about us, or that he's asleep, or that he's far away, or doubt whether he exists at all. But Jesus' response is so astonishing to the disciples. He speaks to the wind, he rebukes it, he tells it off, and says to the sea, "Peace, be still." Incredible. And then Mark continues, "Then the wind ceased, and there was a dead calm." Then Jesus tells off the disciples, "Why are you still afraid? Have you still no faith?" So what's going on here? Why is Jesus telling them off? There's a crisis, they call on him, but that's what we're meant to do, isn't it? Is it that he's telling them off for being frightened? That as a Christian, we shouldn't be frightened in any situation, just believe in Jesus, have faith, it's going to be fine. How hollow that sounds in a crisis. Please don't ever say that to people who are suffering. It can't mean that we're not allowed to be frightened, not allowed to complain to him about our suffering. How often are the Psalms full of complaints about suffering? Even Jesus on the cross says to God, "Why have you forsaken me?" What is this all about, Jesus? I think that in this incident, we see the crux of discipleship. So clear. Whenever we're suffering, whenever we're frightened, the disciples needed Jesus. We need him to do things for us, to do things for them, to do things for us, and to do them now. He wanted them, he wants us to trust him, to trust him. Like so many of the witness stories about Jesus told to us in the Gospels, this is a story which opens up for us something about Jesus' character, about God's character. And only when we know someone's character can we trust them. We cannot trust Jesus if we don't know him, know that he's trustworthy. When we say to someone, "Don't you have faith in me?" we mean, "Don't you know my character yet?" And I think the reason that he's telling off the disciples is because his character, God's character, has been maligned. When they say, "Don't you care that we are perishing?" he replies, "Have you still no faith?" And there are three trusts involved in this. Firstly, to trust that Jesus, that God, is present and active. He's present and active, even though he may appear to be asleep in the stern. You see, some churchgoers don't really believe that God is present and active. They may think that God once upon a time created the universe. He might be there, but he's gone off somewhere else now, and he's not active in our daily lives, changing our situation when we appeal to him. This sort of belief is called deism. But Jesus is calling us to trust that he is present and he is active. So first of all, to trust that he's present and he's active. Secondly, to trust that Jesus, that God, has the power to change our situation. Perhaps even the disciples were still thinking that Jesus was a great religious leader, a wonderful rabbi, but not the Son of God. Or perhaps they believe that he's only as powerful as the forces of evil stacked against them. Then Jesus stills the wind and waves. And the disciples say, "Who is this that even the wind and waves obey him?" It's astonishing. But who else does speak to the elements, speaks them into existence? Only God the Creator. And there's no one who has more power in the universe. Jesus is calling us to trust that he does have the power to change our situation, so that he's present and active, that he does have the power. And thirdly, to trust that God cares about us. Some people believe that God needs to be submitted to, but doesn't necessarily care, doesn't necessarily love us. And sometimes when we're suffering, when we're in a situation beyond our control, we can easily think that God doesn't care about us, when he doesn't heal us immediately. And we may think this is because we've taken on board a false myth that Christianity promises a life of continued success, excitement, and growth. We can end up with a sense of entitlement. When I was at theological college, we were shown this cartoon. It was sort of a Roman arena with a group of Christians being pushed by Roman soldiers with swords into the centre of the arena with a crowd baying for blood. And there are a couple of lions padding slowly towards them with their tongues hanging out and licking their lips. The caption underneath the cartoon reads, "Jesus has a wonderful plan for your life." Life is going to get tough. There is going to be suffering. It's the human condition. But we should not judge his care for us, nor the state of our discipleship, by whether we're facing a storm, even by whether he immediately stills the storm. The question is, do we trust that Jesus does care for us and will give us the wherewithal to cope in that moment with whatever the enemy throws at us? So what do we do when the situation is out of control, when the panic is beginning to rise, as the disciples did in the boat? We call out to the one who can help. We trust that he's present and active. We trust that he has the power to help. And we trust that he cares about us. I remember reading about the witness account of people in one of the Twin Towers trying to escape down the staircase on 9/11, knowing that the plane had hit, knowing that the tower could collapse at any moment, calling out, "Jesus, Jesus, Jesus." Jesus does not promise that there won't be disasters, that we won't suffer, but he does promise to be with us throughout, caring for us. He doesn't promise that we won't be frightened, but that because we trust him, the fear that we have can be controlled fear, trusting the one that we know so well, the one who we know cares for us and has never let us down, even if it involves our death, so that we are brought to be with him for eternity. Amen.